You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. On this Thursday, February 15th, the year 2018, I'm John B. from GangreneNation.com. Now, if you enjoy this show, you can subscribe to it. Options include iTunes and Spotify. And if you do that, you'll be able to get the show each day, be delivered to you automatically, and you can listen to us on demand, you know, at the gym, on your commute. Yesterday, I suggested playing it on a Valentine's Day date. I actually would love to hear if anybody, I can't imagine, nobody would be silly enough to do that, but if anybody actually did that, I'd love to hear how that went. And again, I cannot be held responsible if you do something that ridiculous, but anyway, the point is you can listen to the show whenever you want if you subscribe to it. We'll deliver the show to your device each day. And if you do enjoy the show, please give it a good review in iTunes. Today's Thursday, we'll do a mailbag show. These are questions that have both been emailed to me and submitted in the comment section of GangreneNation.com. So our first question was emailed to me by a listener named Christopher. I keep reading the Kirk Cousins stories, but considering the money that we would likely have to give up against the cap, do you think there are any better trade or free agency options this offseason? I'm thinking maybe less obvious choices like Jacoby Brissett, A.J. McCarron, or Tyrod Taylor. Would any of these be a good option? Now, one thing I do have to note is that yesterday the Jets finally made it official. They announced that Jeremy Bates will be the offensive coordinator. There had been a report weeks and weeks ago that the Jets were promoting him, and for whatever reason, the Jets held off on announcing it till yesterday, so now it is official. So now we have a little framework to work with when we're talking about offensive scheme. And the guy who stands out to me is Tyrod Taylor, who I think would be a really good fit in this offense. This is an offense that I think we're going to see the bootleg a lot. And when you have a guy who can run a little bit, a guy who can make plays with his legs, a guy who can take off as a runner and you know, add a little dynamic element that way, I think that adds an extra dimension to an offense like this. Hey, Taylor's a guy who's going to be smart with the football. He avoids the big mistakes. He's not a great quarterback, but I'll say this. If you're asking me, would I rather have Kirk Cousins or Tyrod Taylor, I'd rather have Kirk Cousins. But I'm not sure that Kirk Cousins is so much better than Tyrod Taylor that I'd like to give Kirk Cousins, make him the highest paid player in the league, when I can pay Taylor much less. I think Taylor is a guy who, he's not as good as Cousins, but he might be a better value. And I think value is important. The other thing I like about Taylor is that, you know, he's good enough that, you know, you can feel comfortable with him as your starter, but you can still draft a guy. He's not going to preclude you from drafting a guy. And then you have a nice little insurance policy there. If you can feel comfortable with Taylor as your starter for, you know, 2-3 years. But if a guy you draft is ready to take over, you can move on from Taylor in a year. He's not good in, you know, he's not going to prevent you from moving on if your guy's ready. It kind of reminds me of the situation Kansas City had with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, where the Chiefs were perfectly content to have Smith starting as long as they needed to. But as soon as Mahomes was ready, they were ready to move on from Smith. So I think Taylor would be a guy who would interest me. I think, you know, I don't know exactly what he's going to make, and of course, you know, we don't know officially whether he's going to be available, whether the Bills will let him get away. Now, another hiring the Jets announced yesterday was Rick Dennison as their offensive line coach and run game coordinator. Dennison was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo for Taylor this year, so the question is, would the Jets have a little bit of an advantage? And that actually is a question, because that Buffalo coaching staff did not seem to like Taylor too much. You know, the Buffalo regime did not seem to like Taylor too much. So was Dennison one of those voices who was not a Taylor fan? You have to remember they made that ridiculous move to bench him for Peterman in the game against the Chargers, which, you know, may have almost cost them the playoffs, that they eventually made it. But so that's the question, I think, when it comes to him. Next question, also emailed to me. Should the Jets go all in for Patriots tackle Nate Solder? The Pats cannot hit him with the franchise tag, so there's a good chance he could hit the market. Maybe move Beecham to guard and Adios to Carpenter. The only thing I would take issue with is just the phrase "go all in." I mean, I think there's a limit I'd have for Soldier, but I think he's a guy who I would definitely target. I think he's a good player. I think he's a guy who would make sense. He plays an important position. Beecham's a guy who I think is good enough that if you have to go with him, you're comfortable with that. But he's not necessarily a guy I who would preclude me from going out and making a bigger ticket addition at left tackle. I don't know what you do with. I think maybe you move Beecham to right tackle. He's not really a great run blocker, so I think maybe you move him to the other tackle spot. I'm not sure whether I'd move him inside the guard, but I think you figure that out later. I wish Beecham's contract was structured a little bit differently so that you could more easily escape from it this year. But you just deal with the situation you're presented with. I don't think Beecham is good enough that he should prevent you from looking to upgrade the left tackle position. And I think Soldier would be a really good option. I think he's a good player. And of course he comes with what I call the double value, is that not only are you improving your team, but you're also hurting New England. So a little bit of a double whammy there, which is a nice thing. Next question. Which quarterback in this draft has the highest ceiling? I think if I was asked which quarterback has the highest ceiling, well, I guess it would be Josh Allen, who just, I mean, his physical tools are off the chart. So I think, you know, if he pans out, he's probably the guy who will have the highest ceiling. I think in terms of which quarterback whose game is already developed has the highest ceiling, I'd probably go with Sam Darnold. What I'd take about Darnold over Rosen is the fact that he's got more mobility to his game. He's got more ability to extend plays with his legs. So I like that. The reason I think Rosen would be my number one quarterback at this time, because I think his game is more developed. I think he's the most polished player in this class, and he's also got a lot of physical tools. Now, he's not very mobile, but I think that there are some injury concerns, and some people have some concerns about other stuff that don't involve football. I'm not really sure about any of that, but I think that in terms of just pure ability, it would be Allen. I think in terms of, you know, guy who's got most of the tools, needs a little work, it's Darnold, and the guy who I think is most developed at this point is Rosen. Our next question. You always hear about how quarterback arm strength is overrated, but just how meaningless is it? I think it's different. I think the words overrated and meaningless are different. I do agree that it's overrated. I don't think it's meaningless. Just having a rocket arm doesn't really do you a lot of good if you don't know how to play the quarterback position. But it does make a difference. And the reason I say it makes a difference is it compensates for other problems you might have. The example I would give would be if you don't have a big arm, if you're Chad Pennington, you have to throw with a lot more anticipation. The ball has to come out early to get to the receiver on time, because if the ball doesn't come out on time, then the defensive back's going to have a lot of time to get to the ball because it's not getting there as fast. So you have to be able to throw with more anticipation. And one of the reasons Pennington was able to have a successful career despite not having a big arm was he was able to anticipate and put the ball where it needed to be before the receiver was to the spot. When you have a bigger arm, you have a little more time. You know, you don't have to process things quite as quickly. So, you know, you may be able to get away with throwing, like, because the ball goes with such zip that the defender still doesn't have enough time to get to the ball. There's also the idea that a big arm forces the defense. You know, you always hear about the guy can make all the throws. And what that means is essentially it forces the defense to defend the entire field. You know, if you watch the All-22 film, you'll see points where a defender just, like, backs off a receiver. He stops covering a receiver because the quarterback's, like, on the other. So, like, if the quarterback scrambles to his right, a receiver who's running a deep pattern to the left side of the field, his defender may just back off him and go somewhere else. And essentially, the rationale behind that is the guy looks open, but the quarterback just doesn't have the arm to get the receiver the ball, so the defender doesn't have to worry about covering the guy because the pass is not going to be completed. So if you have a big arm, maybe you can hit that guy. And that's one of the things that kind of pops out about Josh Allen's. When you watch Josh Allen, is that he forces the defense to defend parts of the field that are kind of unimaginable. And it's not just about arm strength. You hear arm strength, you hear arm talent. I think it's more about arm talent. And arm talent means you can throw with a lot of velocity when you're on the move. You can throw with a lot of velocity from different arm angles. And Allen's arm talent is off the charts. So essentially, he forces defenders to cover parts of the field that are unfathomable. In the, you know, like if Allen's scrambling to his right, he can make a throw back to the left with he can just put so much on the ball. He can get the ball to receivers that other quarterbacks couldn't dream of in the same situation. So it matters. It's not the end all. And if Allen does not clean up other parts of his game, he's not going to be a good NFL quarterback. So that, I guess that it matters. It's not the end all though. So, and I think the reason it gets overrated is that quarterback is a position with so many intangibles, whether you're talking intelligence, other things that matter in quarter, the ability to process a defense, things that are difficult to quantify. Arm strength is really one of the few tangibles you can evaluate in a quarterback. So I think that's probably the reason it gets overrated. Next question. Are all players who can play left guard also able to play right guard? Likewise, can most left tackles play right tackle? I think generally yes. It's tricky if you're moving a guy from left tackle to right tackle within a game. I think it gets tricky for them because everything's kind of reversed for them. You know, everything's reversed from their vantage point. Can everybody who play left tackle play right tackle? Yeah, probably. I'm not sure everybody who can play right tackle can play left tackle though, and this has actually become a debate in the football community in recent years whether left tackle is overemphasized. But my view is that most quarterbacks are righty, so they cannot see what's happening. They cannot see the guy the left tackle is blocking, so you want to have a really good guy there. Now, the counter to that is a lot of the talented pass rushers in this league are now going up against right tackles. Their defense is deploying them against right tackles because right tackles are weaker, so they're kind of attacking the weakness in an offensive scheme. So, you know, there's an open debate there. I think generally, yes, you can flip sides from left guard to right guard, and you generally can flip from left tackle to right tackle. I'm not sure you necessarily can flip from right tackle to left tackle, although because the premium pass rushers are starting to go up against right tackles, I think right tackle is going to be viewed as more of a premium position going forward, so you might be able to answer that question differently in the future. Next question, top five football movies. And I'm not a big movie guy, so I'm going to leave off something that probably deserves to be there. And I'm going to get, I bet you this will generate the most mail, the most comments in disagreement. But the five that I have are Remember the Titans, Brian Song, Rudy, We Are Marshall, and The Express, which was a really great movie that came out in 2008. It came out in the fall of 2008. I actually saw this in the theater. It was about the great Ernie Davis. And for whatever reason, the movie was a box office flop, and people don't really remember it, but it was very well done. It was about the great running back Ernie Davis, and I thought I think that's one of the most underrated football movies of all time. Now, I haven't seen a lot more football movies than that, so but those were five that were really well done. I mean, I can't put Adam Sandler's The Water Boy there, so those are the top five that I've seen. But I've also haven't seen a lot of the great football movies. So if you disagree with, don't get too mad at me if you don't like that list. Next question, do Sherron Peake and Devin Smith have a shot at making the squad next year? I think they have a shot at making the squad, and I think it's improved by the uncertainty you have of Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson's situation, and their situations are uncertain for two different reasons. In the case of Enunwa, he's coming back from injury. With Anderson, you have his off-field scenario, which will play itself out. So I think they have a chance. I don't think either of these guys is guaranteed a spot, though. I mean, we're talking, you know, 3-4 years into these guys' careers, and they have not made an impact yet. You know, by the time you're at the point Peake and Smith are, it's time to start making an impact, because they're right at the point where if you don't start seeing an impact soon, you'd have to conclude that they're not going to amount to anything. So I don't think their spots are guaranteed. I think they're going to have to earn their spots, and they're going to have to show that they could potentially have a future in this league. Next question, what are the advantages and disadvantages of a zone blocking scheme? I think in a way the answer is the same for both advantages and disadvantages. It tends to be more of a complex read for the running back. The running back tends to pick his own hole to run through more in a zone blocking scheme than he does in a man blocking scheme. And that's I'm overgeneralizing there, but for the most part, the running back has more of a decision to make which hole to go through in his own blocking scheme. So it's an advantage from the standpoint that you're not necessarily dead set on going to hit one specific hole. So if you know the hole you want to hit is not blocked well, you can pick another one that's blocked a little bit better. The disadvantage is that you need a running back with good vision, because there tends to be more of a decision for the running back to make. And now I'm not saying, you know, there's a spot these runs are initially designed to go for in zone schemes. And look, in a man scheme, if the hole you're trying to hit is not blocked well, you're going to look for another one. But that's just so I am overgeneralizing there. But in general, but I think in a broad sense, the complexity is kind of an advantage, but it also can be a bit of a disadvantage. Next question: if you could trade up to one or two, is there anyone worth trading up for? And if so, what would you give up to get him? So I'm not a big fan of trading up in general. I think that if you look through recent NFL history, the teams that tend to draft the best are the teams with the most picks. So I think trading down is generally a better value play. The one exception I would make is for a quarterback. I think if you can get a quarterback you really believe in, that's who you move up for. So of the quarterbacks in this draft, I think the two that I really like are Darnold and Rosen. If I could get one of those guys, I'd move up. And I think the going rate is probably going to be the sixth overall pick and the 2019 first rounder. Now, I know the Jets have two second rounders, so there's lots of speculation they trade those. It seems to me, though, that when you move up, you're talking multiple first rounders. So I think that's probably more likely. You're probably going to have to put the 2019 first rounder on the table and then maybe fill in a few picks after that, which I would do because, look, a quarterback's more valuable than that staple of picks. If you have a chance to land a quarterback who can be with you, you know, a 15-year player for your team, be a franchise quarterback, it's worth it. So I think those are the two guys I'm really sold on. I know Baker Mayfield has a lot of fans. Josh Allen has his fans. I wouldn't trade up for those guys. I think the two guys I trade up for are Rosen and Darnold. Next question. How much heat will Mike Maccagnan get during the draft for trading for Rashard Robinson from the 49ers? I'm not sure he's going to get a lot of heat during the draft, but I think Robinson's play next year is going to answer that question for you. I think I have a lot of questions about why the Jets gave up a fifth-round pick for Robinson. This was a player who did not have a good track record in this league, and draft picks are valuable. You can't just be giving draft picks away, and that's one of the staples of, you look at the unsuccessful franchises in this league, one of the hallmarks of these franchises is that they waste draft picks. And I don't know why this player was so coveted that he merited a draft pick. You know, he's a guy who really has not shown much ability to cover, grabs a ton. This is the type of player who, if he gets cut, then you look into bringing him in. But you don't give up a draft pick. I understand a fifth-round pick, the odds aren't that great. But I think the odds are probably better of a fifth-round pick hitting than of Robinson hitting. I mean, Robinson, you already have a track record that's not so great in the NFL. Now, you got to give him a chance, though. I don't think you can crush Maccagnan for it yet, though. You have to give the coaching staff an offseason to work with the guy, because maybe they know something we don't. So it's possible that with an offseason of development, they can turn Robinson into a player. But I'll tell you, as a general philosophy, I don't love the idea of the Jets trading a draft pick for a player who really doesn't have that good of a track record in this league. So we'll see. I don't think it'll happen during the draft, but I think next year it might be a worthwhile question to ask. Next question. Maccagnan says he likes to draft best player available. At six with the two front-runner quarterbacks gone, do you think he forgets the board and takes a quarterback? Or would you expect him to take the best overall talent available, even if it's a big-bodied safety? So I'm presuming in this scenario the Jets have not signed Kirk Cousins, because I think if Cousins is on board, then the Jets just take the best player available or look to trade down. And I think the Jets should trade down in that scenario. I think Maccagnan is in a situation where he almost has to take a quarterback. I mean, this franchise has just been in such a malaise over the last few years. I think the big part of the malaise is that there's just been no hope at the quarterback position. You know, you've had Petty and Hackenberg, who you really didn't have, or at least I can tell you, I and a lot of other people did not have any realistic hopes that either of those guys would develop into a franchise quarterback. At some point, you have to instill hope in this fan base. And at some point, McCagnan's got to solve the quarterback situation because he can't keep going 5-11. And that's going to require improving this roster is going to require finding a quarterback. At some point, this team has to be put on stable footing for the future. And that, again, that requires finding a it's just so important on so many levels. But the most important level is that if this team's ever going to be successful, it's going to have to find a genuine solution, a genuine long-term solution, a quarterback. And I think McCagnan's, you know, close to being out of time. He's got to find a quarterback this year. I think it's got to be this year. So I think he almost has to take a quarterback if they don't Jets don't sign Cousins. So I think everybody loves to say we go best player available. I don't think there's a single team out there that goes pure best player available. You know, if I had a young franchise quarterback in place, even if I'm a best player available guy, I'm not picking Josh Rosen in the top five this year. You know, nobody is actually. There's some teams that trend more best player available than others, but it's a complex process. There are lots of things that play into it. So I don't think McCagnan's going to forsake a quarterback just to grab the best available talent this year. That'll do it for our show. Thanks for tuning in today, and thanks for all your questions. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. Options include iTunes and Spotify. And please leave the show a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week.